Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACC Life Health Trust. Last week, Dell Tech released its 42nd annual Dell Tech Clarity Architecture and Engineering Industry Study. It's a voluminous report, 107 pages long, delving into every aspect of how design firms got through the difficult last year and what they are looking forward to in the coming year. Dell Tech surveyed 480 firms of all sizes spread across the country, as well as a handful in Canada. You can download the study for free at the Dell Tech website, and you'll find a wealth of financial information and statistics against which you can benchmark. To talk with us today about the study is Megan Miller, Product Marketing Director at Dell Tech. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
So one of the biggest topics that came out of the study was technology and the rate at which firms are becoming, and I put this in quotes, digitally mature. There was a statistic that one in four firms is digitally mature at this point, and three in four plan to be so within the next 5 years. What makes a firm digitally mature, and how do they get there?
So when we look at digital maturity, we're looking at it from the standpoint of having better alignment between your business objectives and initiatives and your IT initiatives. So as companies are looking at becoming more mature, they're looking at ways to better integrate their business processes. For some firms, that first step might just be better alignment between their business goals and then having the momentum to adapt the technology needed to actually go forward with those goals. For more mature firms, it really means more around using integrated and digital, using those words and having that as a commonplace within the organization, that it's not just speak, it's not just something that somebody says they're going to do, but they're actually showing momentum and movement in those areas. So it could be that the culture is more aligned to innovation and they're prioritizing really finding better ways to do everyday things through technology or to be able to get to those strategic goals. So that innovation really is focused on maybe it's improving the client experience or increasing revenue or delivering better projects. So it can take a lot of different forms depending on the company and what they're doing today and really what type of firm they want to be in the future. One of the things that we've seen as we looked at some of the results this year is that the pandemic really uncovered a lot of challenges and inefficiencies for companies. And so what we're seeing now is that firms have that awareness and now's the opportunity to identify where they can take action and where they can leverage technology to move them forward where they want to with their business.
In talking with firms about technology, one of the concepts is that it provides a competitive advantage. The theory being that that firms that are willing to invest in technology and training can focus on more specialized niches, they can command higher prices, and they face less competition in those niches. Is that at all borne out in the study?
So we don't necessarily have data specifically to highlight if the technologies are giving a true competitive advantage, but we have seen that large firms, for example, are more likely to see these emerging technologies such as Internet of Things, geolocation, augmented reality as important to their business. And they're also more likely to focus those technologies in the areas of project management and project delivery. So this is actually an area that I want to dig into some more to understand how those technologies are providing advantages, because I think there's some key areas there that would be interesting as an industry for us to look at. It depends on the market. It could depend on the client. There could be a certain industry that we're supporting that's more receptive to some of these technologies, where in others, if you're leading with some of these, it may not be to your advantage. So I think in some cases, it's really just understanding what is it that your client's appetite, the market's appetite, and then can you use that to make sure that you say, yes, this is something we can provide that goes above and beyond to make their experience better. But we don't necessarily this year have specifics around how it's providing that competitive advantage, but I think that'd be really interesting for us to dig into a little bit more.
Well, on that point of figuring out the impact of technology, there was a sort of one of the themes was the challenge of prioritizing which technologies would have the biggest impact on their business. Do you, from the responses, do you have any recommendations on how firms can do that effectively?
Absolutely. And I think it ties a little bit into what I just mentioned in that One way is to prioritize, and when you're looking at prioritizing those technologies, is to start those conversations with clients and with others in the industry. What are they seeing? What is their appetite for this technology? What are they hearing in their circles? And from others in the industry, how are they using this? What are they seeing? And how is it helping, or how has it caused challenges in projects? Because especially as people are just starting to pull these into projects in certain ways, it may not all be, you know, perfect, and it may not all go well the first time. So just understanding what are some of those are, I think, is going to be important. Another option is to look internally, because oftentimes what companies are finding is that they have some of that expertise already within their company, and start to brainstorm with your staff about what are some of the opportunities. How could you see something like big data improving how they deliver projects or how they better manage their business? The more discussions that are happening, the more informed that your teams will be. And then the more opportunities that will become apparent that you may not be seeing yet, because they may not be something that's on the forefront of your mind. So I think just having more of those conversations can help, just becoming more and more educated, staying up to date on what those technologies are, and then looking for some of those opportunities and testing the waters a little bit with clients to say, hey, if we are interested in maybe using this virtual reality to help you stay better informed on what's happening on your project site, is that something you'd be interested in? And see what type of feedback you get before just diving in and making it a part of the project deliverable.
Shifting gears a little, another overarching theme I thought from the study was that project management continues to be a weak point for a lot of firms. And the study highlighted both inexperienced project managers and a lack of integrated tools. And for example, you found that only half of firms provide financial management training to project managers, which seems kind of crazy to me. But given that project managers have such a big impact on firm profitability, what are firms doing to address these problems?
What we often see is that firms may not be holding their project managers accountable for that financial performance of projects, and they're often relying on, maybe they have project billers or they have financial teams that handle those things about the project, right? They want the project manager focused on the deliverables and making sure that the resources are doing what they need to. But that's leading not only to a gap in just having overall visibility in what's happening with that project, but it doesn't give that project manager the information that they need to be able to proactively manage those projects. So, you know, they're having to check in with several people, they're relying on other people for that. So one of the things that we've seen is that one of the barriers is accessibility and visibility. And that's also something that's in the report. If you look into, you know, how things like schedules and budgets and cost variance and some of those key things, some of the time that's in the hands of the financial leaders. And so it's partnering with those financial leaders to say, what are the things that would be beneficial if PMs had access to, so that they can be more proactive in what they're managing? So first step is really making sure they have access to what they need so that they can monitor that. But then it's also making sure that you're clearly identifying what project managers are accountable for and what that means. So are they accountable for just monitoring how that project's performing, or are they accountable to getting that project to a certain profitability? What should they be monitoring, and what tools do they have so that they can proactively manage that? Some of what we've seen firms doing, to your point, there's some that are doing actual training on financial management and what that means, what are we looking for in these numbers. Others are increasing visibility, whether that's through dashboards or through having their project managers actually deliver reports to their leaders so that they're talking about the financial health of those projects. Oftentimes, you know, you hear people say, if you want to learn something, then you have to teach it. And so if you have to share that information with your leaders rather than hoping they find it on the reports, you'd be much more likely to have to dig in and understand that, which all of that then goes back to the point about training, of making sure they understand, what am I even looking at when I look at these financial reports, and what am I looking for? Then you can hold them more accountable for that data accuracy. One of the other areas, especially when we look at, you know, it's not just on the financial side, the budgets, the schedules, all these things around project management didn't show very strong this year. Some of that may have been impacted by the pandemic, but we also are seeing fewer firms are looking at project management more like a discipline. In the same way they'd look at structural engineering or architecture, what do successful projects look like, and how do I proactively manage my projects to get there? Those conversations with project managers around what's missing, is it training? Is it awareness? Is it visibility? What's getting in their way of being successful? I think simply asking those questions sometimes can help identify some barriers that companies may not even realize are there until they're asking those project managers for more information.
So the idea there being that a project manager in structural and a project manager in mechanical, the project, the structure of the project is still the same, although the product might be different.
Right. Yeah. And or from what makes a successful project, right? You need to stay on budget. You need to stay on schedule. What does that take? And in some cases, it depends on the structure of the firm, the size of the firm, the complexity. Oftentimes, project management may take a back seat because that same person is focused on the deliverables and they need to get the design done first, and then they'll worry about managing the project. And so even the idea of separating that, you may still be working on deliverables, but maybe you're not designing any projects that you're managing. You know, how can we separate some of those responsibilities so that the project managers can truly focus on how are we delivering this project and be more proactive about it, rather than waiting until billing reports are done, until draft invoices are done to review, and then we realize we have a problem. And at that point, it might be too late to be able to adjust the direction of that project.
Obviously, your report had to deal with the pandemic year, but a lot of firms are now reopening their offices, but you found that a lot of firms are planning to hold on to some of the workforce changes brought on by the pandemic. For example, you found that 75% are going to adopt more flexible work options and 51% will adapt new remote policies. Is this due to the need to please employees, or have firms found that their teams are working better and being more productive under these new policies?
So I think there's an interesting blend here. In some cases, employees felt more productive or had a better work-life balance. And we talk about, you know, the time they're spending commuting and how they're able to better leverage that time, being able to have flexibility they may need to in their personal life or whatever that is, whether it's kids or parents or whatever they're dealing with. And even if they're only maintaining those options on a part-time basis, for many employees, they feel like that's giving them a little bit more control over their life while still feeling like they are doing what they need to and they can still be productive in that environment. In some cases, this workplace flexibility is really going to open up the candidate pool. We've seen that some people are taking advantage of what they know about working from home. I mean, I think if you look at especially in the A&E industry prior to the pandemic, there were very few companies that even entertained the idea of having somebody that would work from home. Now that we've all experienced it and people know whether that's a good fit for them, then, you know, it makes it much easier now to be able to say, this is good for me, or no, I need to be in an office. This is someplace that, you know, this is just not a good environment for me. But I think what it's allowing people to do is to take advantage of that and be able to explore opportunities that maybe they wouldn't have even been able to consider previously. Maybe there were geographic limitations that they were experiencing. So we do expect that this is going to become part of the competitive advantage and some of the benefits that employees may be seeking when they're looking for new opportunities. But again, there's still a key piece of that that I think companies need to focus on. And there's a balance there for those employees who are continuing to work in that flexible environment. It could lead to some new challenges. One of the things that we saw in this year's report was an increase in utilization. We saw an increase in some of the financial numbers. Some of that is because many of those employees were working longer hours. They weren't going anywhere. They were investing more time. So what could happen is that they become overburdened. They become overworked, and that puts your employees at risk. There's also that lack of employee engagement. Some people just physically need to be able to be with other people to have that engagement, and they just don't feel that that's the same virtually. And so there's new opportunities, but there's also new challenges that the HR teams are going to need to proactively manage to figure out what's the right balance. I think what we'll see is that companies will have a hybrid. And we've seen this with some companies already, that they may offer Instead of 5 days a week in the office, maybe you can pick 1 or 2 days that you're still working from home. You've got that flexibility, but we're not all remote all the time. So how companies work through this, I think, is going to be really interesting to see how that plays out and what opportunities they offer to employees moving forward.
One point that you made, the geographic location of employees, it seems to me that would be a great opportunity for firms, because finding new employees is so tough. And so if you don't need to hire within a commuting distance of your office anymore, if you can hire in Dayton or Seattle, if your office is in DC, that seems to me you've really broadened your candidate pool.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we look at the past year, with what we saw in the report with furloughs and layoffs, we saw some companies that were stalling their hiring due to the pandemic, but we also saw that there were companies that were taking advantage of it. We saw some that increased their staff and they were taking advantage of those opportunities to bring in new staff. We do continue to see that finding and retaining qualified talent is the top challenge by more than half of those respondents. We also have seen that one of their top initiatives is to provide a better opportunity to be able to the onboarding process. And part of that is the remote onboarding that was a huge struggle for many companies this year. How do I onboard these people when they're not in the same location that I am? So well, we don't necessarily have specific information around, you know, how has this really, how has this impacted this, or how are we seeing companies broaden that candidate pool? We do have some anecdotal conversations that we've had with customers and with people in our networks that we have seen that they're employees that are taking advantage of this. They're moving to job opportunities that they never would have considered previously. They didn't want to move their family. They didn't want to take that risk. And we're also seeing, to your point, those companies that are taking advantage and they're broadening that candidate pool, where instead of saying, you know, this is for X office, now I can say that as long as skills and requirements, you can work wherever you need to, but it may have some travel requirements, right? You might need to be in the office once a quarter or every so many months or whatever that might be. So I think it's going to be on both sides, where I think people are going to start to seek new opportunities. And this is going to be one of those opportunities and one of those advantages that companies are going to see. So again, a few things to think about here: that firms are going to have to get more creative with their recruiting, because they're probably going up against companies that are recruiting for staff that they've never faced before, because they didn't have that same pool of companies that they were up against. But it's also going to mean that engagement and retention, especially for those top performers, is going to be so much more important. So what are your employees looking at as their top benefits? What could you do to improve their workplace experience? And especially with those remote employees, how do you make that onboarding experience better for them? How do you get that employee engagement? How do you get them connected if they are sitting in their house for 40 hours, 50 hours a week? So nearly half of our firms have said that again is one of their biggest initiatives. So, and this again is no different than what I would look at with project management. We talked about some of the tools and the challenges that companies were looking at there. We look at human resources and human capital management. Many companies don't have the right systems and the technology in place specifically in this area. In one of our questions, we actually ask about if they've invested in their HR solutions, and more than 40% have not added to or replaced their HR solution in more than 5 years, which is creating significant inefficiencies in that entire employee lifecycle, from, you know, the finding, the recruiting, the retention, building those successful career development plans and succession plans. All of those play into creating that environment. Now it's just more complex, because now we have remote employees and hybrid employees and all of these different parts and pieces. And it makes it more challenging for HR, because they may be used to bringing somebody into the office. How do you do those interviews as effectively virtually and create that same engagement that you would if they were able to sit across the table from somebody?
Yeah, that's an excellent point you make about your employees now are more vulnerable to being poached by other companies. So it goes both ways. So
absolutely.
To probably the, you know, the favorite section of your report for most engineering firms is the financials, which are really quite comprehensive. And it was really strange that this year, when everyone was having so much trouble, that firms did so well. The average operating profit in 2020 among the firms in the survey was 19%, which was up from 9.3% in 2011. And you attributed obviously that to lower overhead because we weren't in our offices. Given the lessons that firms learned in the pandemic, do you see operating profits staying high, or do you see them settling back down into historical levels?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I think one thing that is also interesting as we look at last year, as while firms were struggling across the board, I think it's worth noting too that one of the questions we asked this year was the impact on projects. And a majority of projects, I think it was around 65%, were not impacted at all. They didn't have schedule delays. They didn't have any of those impacts. So I think that's part of the reason that we've seen that strong financial performance is, while we had some projects that may have been canceled or delayed, for the most part, those projects were staying on track. So we do expect that this number, I don't think it's going to stay up at that rate for a long time. It'll settle back down a little bit because we do expect some of those back in. And that's where a lot of the change, I think, happened, to your point. You know, we expect that people are going to start traveling. There's some clients that want that face-to-face, and doing virtual meetings is only going to work for so long. We expect conferences to kick back up and be in person and not just virtual in the near future. And so, with that said, one of the things that I think companies did really well in the past year was having a much closer control or scrutiny of those expenses. And so that I don't think will go away. But if they're with that scrutiny, as well as leveraging technology where it makes sense, now that we know that some of these things will work, whether it's virtual interviews or project meetings, some of those things are here to stay. So it's going to be a little bit of a balance there. But we do expect that as the world opens up, there's also going to be more employees that are going to take PTO. They're going to take vacation that they didn't take last year because there wasn't anywhere for them to go. So that's going to lower the overall billable hours back to a more normal level as well, which will also be good to avoid that burnout that I mentioned previously that we don't want to see with that staff. So firms overall, I think, will continue to see strong financial performance. We're seeing strong indicators in, you know, different markets that are rebounding more quickly, I think, than what was expected. But I don't think that it's likely that we'll see it as high as what we have seen this year. So we expect some of those numbers to start to balance out a little bit more. But we do think that it's an opportunity for companies to take a look at what were the things that they learned when they were controlling costs. What were the things that they scrutinized during that time? What were those lessons learned? One of the big things that we saw this year was a significant decrease in the average collection period. So what did we do differently? And how do we keep doing that moving forward so that the things that we can control, we can control better and keep those numbers on the right side? But then some of those things that are things that we need to get back into the fold, we can do it strategically and purposefully so that if we have expenses, we know that they're for the right reasons and they're not just things that, you know, that we've been doing for 20 years, so we keep doing them, but we're doing them because it's the right thing for the business.
Yeah, I totally anecdotally speaking, I would think that, you know, the break from the having done things for 20 years open people's eyes that they never thought they needed to be open. And now they see that there are opportunities there that just they didn't even realize were there before.
Absolutely. And there's a balance in that too, right? I mean, there's some that, you know, we've talked about virtual conferences, and as somebody who has exhibited at virtual conferences and it's just so different and it's hard. And that's not likely something that's going to be easily replaced and permanently with virtual. People are excited to get back and be able to have those face-to-face interactions and conversations. And it's important that, you know, the financial leaders are looking at that too and realizing this isn't something that we can just say, oh, we did it virtually 1 year, so now we can just do that virtually forever. In some cases, that's not going to work. It just doesn't create that same experience. And so it's balancing that, what are the right in-person things that we need to do for the health of our business and the relationships with our clients? And what are the things that we can still leverage some of the technology and the things that we learned in the last year moving forward?
Well, great. Well, as I mentioned, you can download the report from the Dell Tech website. We'll actually put a link in the show notes so you can access it straight off this show. So we've been speaking with Megan Miller. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
And you've been listening to the Engineering Influence podcast presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACC Life Health Trust. Thanks for listening.